This is the podcast of the German Historical Institute London, a research centre dedicated to supporting and connecting students and scholars from Britain and Germany. The podcast series presents current research in British, German and European history, as well as colonial and global history. For more information on the German Historical Institute London, future events, the GHIL Library, studentships and more podcast episodes, please visit our website at ghil.ac.uk.
This GHIL podcast episode is a recording of a GHIL lecture in cooperation with the Modern German History Seminar at the Institute of Historical Research, given by Isabella Löhr, on the birth of the refugee figure in the 1970s. Isabella Löhr is Professor of International History of the 20th Century at the Friedrich Meinecke Institute at the Freie Universität Berlin and Head of the Globalizations in a Divided World Department at the Leibniz Center for Contemporary History in Potsdam. The 20th century is normally considered the century of the refugee, beginning with the mass flight and expulsion of civilian populations in the First World War, and reaching its sad climax with millions of displaced people in the Second World War and its immediate aftermath. In the German discourse, however, the refugee appears as a socially relevant figure only from the beginning of the 1970s onwards, when an increasing number of refugees from non-European territories came to Europe. The lecture explores this phenomenon by looking at how decolonization and the transformation of human rights policies and international migration regimes from the 1950s contributed to new perceptions of forced migration in European societies.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and thank you so much for the kind introduction. It's really a pleasure to speak here today and to present initial insights from a new research project on the emergence of the refugee figure in the 1970s in German-speaking countries, I should add. So at the beginning of the 21st century, the term refugee seems to be self-explanatory. If you were to ask a passersby about what the word refugee means, this person would probably raise an eyebrow, trying to ascertain whether or not this is a joke, looking around to find the hidden camera. Yet today, the mere presence and the physical movement of people categorized as refugees represent an omnipresent issue that tends to perturb individual and collective visions of the social political order, be it on the national, the European, or the international scale. Moreover, the refugee is mostly perceived as the other. It has turned into a figure that epitomizes the concept of the stranger. They have crossed international borders because of persecution or physical threat, with the aim of reaching a territory that they expect to provide a safe space. At the same time, refugees are considered as others, whose linguistic, religious, ethnic, or cultural alterity often prompts fierce debates about questions of belonging or difference, and that can trigger political action aimed at legalizing or illegalizing refugee movements and rights. The refugee has become a signature of the 21st century, a figure that embodies contested visions of social cohesion, security, and threat. But when exactly did the refugee become a generally accepted, emblematic figure at the center of questions of belonging and exclusion? And since when has the refugee been perceived as an international subject that puts both national and international solidarities to the test? As I will argue, the perception of the refugee as an international personhood is a rather recent phenomenon that emerged only in the second half of the 20th century. While the term has taken shape in international law since the 1920s, the term's usage in German language has a much more complicated history. A closer glance at the career of the German term Flüchtling reveals that the term was only acknowledged in the 1970s and was understood as a designation for people who had fled to Germany from other world regions. As I will argue, the term emerged out of a particular historical constellation in which the international refugee regime was undergoing a fundamental transformation, and in the course of which the Federal Republic gradually redefined its position within international society. Let me make two preliminary comments. In the following, I will present a conceptual history of the German term Flüchtling. with a particular focus on West Germany up to the 1980s, roughly. However, I will embed the German discussion in its wider international setting. And first, I need to point to the distinction between the terms refugee and Flüchtling. Refugee as a legal term is at the heart of international refugee law. For this reason, the English term refugee is actually directly translated into German as Flüchtling. It is, however, and you will see why, important not to equate the terms refugee and Flüchtling. As I will argue, the debates on the German term Flüchtling are different from those on the English term refugee. Therefore, I will use the term refugee when talking about international debates or presenting some general arguments on the subject. And I will use the German term Flüchtling when I'm talking about its specific usage in the German context. Second, my talk comes out of the context of a research project called Refugees and Others, the Production of Refugee-Related Figures Since the 1970s. And I'm heading this project jointly with Jochen Oltmarv. It belongs to the Collaborative Research Center, which is Sonderforschungsbereich in German, on the production of knowledge at Osnabrück University. In this project, we start from the assumption that the term Flüchtling peaks for the first time in the course of the 1970s, when its use becomes increasingly pervasive. We are interested in the subsequent transformation of the term from the 1970s onwards. To this end, we combine quantitative and qualitative methods to trace the emergence of a number of refugee-related figures in German language. For instance, asylum seekers, boat refugees, skilled refugees, or economic migrants. The aim is to track down semantic shifts in the use of refugee-related terms over several decades and to understand how they have become relevant for the perception, classification, and treatment of people on the move. To support my arguments, I will be sharing some statistical data, and I would like to thank Dominik Sauerbrei, a PhD student in our project, for his excellent work in preparing these statistics. And just briefly to the structure of the talk. First, I will go back to the forced mass migrations during the First and Second World Wars that constituted the point of departure in the national and international responses to refugees. Then I will examine the use of the German term Flüchtling, which differed in significant respects from the international use of its English equivalent refugee. And subsequently, I will trace the gradual transformation of the term by connecting it to developments in international law and the activities of the UN Refugee Organization in West Germany in particular. So let me begin briefly by taking you through the long and winding history of forced migration since the beginning of the First World War. As you will all know, well into the 1950s, Europe was a continent of mass flight and expulsion. Our awareness of this fact has receded due to the shifting global geographies of flight since the 1960s, the experiences of the Trente Glorieuse, and the long decades of peace in Europe, and only to charge back into public consciousness today. But as soon as we look at the first half of the 20th century, things look fundamentally different. The dimensions of mobilization, human loss, and forced displacement during the two world wars were tremendous. During the First World War, an estimated 30 million people were seeking protection across Europe, some of them fleeing well into the 1920s, many of them at the Eastern Front due to the high volatility of the front line and the accelerating decomposition of the Russian Empire. The conflicts that followed the First World War continued well into the 1920s, involving a dozen or so countries in Eastern Europe, and with them, mass displacements. Certainly, as Philipp Thier has argued, the mass expulsions underwent a major transformation from a wartime measure to an essential strategy of international politics. What had already been on the horizon since the Balkan Wars of 1912-13 now became official. Some 25 million members of ethnic minorities in Eastern Europe were the subject of international and interstate deliberations. They either could opt out of the titular nation, as many ethnic Hungarians, for example, did vis-à-vis Romania or Czechoslovakia, or they were forced to leave by international agreements. And the Lausanne Treaty of 1923 is the most prominent example for that. Mass displacements continued into the 1930s and reached an incredible extent in the 1940s. The rise of fascism in the 1930s generated a considerable number of refugees. German Jews, refugees from the Spanish Civil War, and the refugee movements following the Munich Agreement in 1938. The situation worsened massively with the outbreak of war in 1939. It is difficult to estimate the numbers, as people fled from the approaching war fronts were displaced, recruited as forced laborers, or, as in the case of the Jewish population, killed in concentration camps or in mass executions. Michael Schwarz estimates that some 60 million civilians became refugees in Europe in the course of the war. This would be five times the number of the people who became refugees between 1914 and 1923. And this is only to illustrate really the extremely chaotic situation in the early 1940s in Europe. Let us go back to how the international community responded to refugee movements in the 1920s. Interestingly, contemporaries considered the large numbers of people fleeing from military violence and state repression to be a temporary phenomenon, one that would pass as conflicts subsided and national borders were redrawn. This view was reflected in the various official titles given to the first High Commissioner for Refugees, Friedhof Nansen. Nansen was appointed by the newly established League of Nations in 1919. Initially, his task was to organize the resettlement of the estimated 8 to 9 million prisoners of war. Only later did his remit come into include finding ways to deal with the refugee crisis that had unfolded since the armistice. Nonetheless, until the reorganization of the High Commission in the 1930s, the League member states allowed Nansen to provide only selective assistance to particular groups. From 1921, Nansen served as High Commissioner for Russian refugees, from 1922 as High Commissioner for Greek refugees, and from 1925 for Armenian refugees. In 1934, the High Commissioner for Refugees from Germany was another group-specific protection organization. The first international recognized definition of refugee followed this group-based understanding of the term. The arrangement of 12 May 1926 on the issuance of identity certificates to Russian and Armenian refugees was focused on those respective groups. It was adopted under the auspices of the League of Nations. Only people of Russian and Armenian origin who were not or no longer under the diplomatic protection of the Soviet Union or the new Turkish state were defined as being in need of protection. Refugees were thus politically defined groups. They formerly held Turkish or Russian citizenship, but were outside these borders and no longer enjoyed the protection of the respective state authority. Historian Anne Schuld has argued that this case-specific understanding of refugees was rooted in the firm conviction that the problem would resolve over time. International civil servants, in particular, assumed that those affected would successfully integrate into the respective labor markets and that this generation would eventually disappear. The idea that the refugee politics of the 1920s and 1930s were only the beginning of mass flight in the 20th century was unimaginable, especially to politicians, legal experts, and officials in the orbit of the League of Nations. Interestingly, the use of the German language term Flüchtlinge evokes a slightly different picture, one that raises more questions than answers. As I've already noted, contemporaries used the term refugee to describe people fleeing violence, discrimination, and persecution in other countries. The same applies today. The crossing of an internationally acknowledged border is at the core of the prevalent understanding of what constitutes both a refugee and a Flüchtling in law, politics, and everyday life. While the English term refugee and its French counterpart réfugié had been established already in the 18th and 19th century, it is a different story with the German term. It came to be established as an everyday word in German only in the context of the forced mass migrations of the First World War. From around 1916-17, an increasing number of German language publications began to use the term Flüchtlinge in their titles. But they did so in a particular way that only partly reflected the events on the Western and Eastern fronts. Publications mostly referred to refugees from and in German territories. Moreover, the term was used to denote specific refugee movements that occurred at specific places at specific times. For instance, the term was used to describe the population leaving the war theaters in East Prussia at the beginning of the war, which resulted in many of the region's inhabitants fleeing to other parts of the German Empire. The selective and fragmented use of the term continued during the Weimar Republic. At the time, contemporaries witnessed an exodus from regions that had to be ceded as a result of the Versailles Peace Treaty. When the term Flüchtling was used, it mostly referred to German nationals or people categorized as ethnic Germans who migrated from the former imperial territories to the territory of the Weimar Republic. And in the contemporary usage, it was Grenzlandvertrieben. This was mostly the term used. To give an example, in 1920, the Reichskommissariat, though the Reichskommissariat for Civilian Prisoners and Refugees, was established to set up transit camps where refugees from the former imperial territories were assembled and provided with meager care. Interestingly, the Reichskommissariat was only responsible for German nationals, whilst the care, let alone the mere existence of refugees with different nationalities, was not reflected in its remit. Various new terms or synonyms were used for the camp inhabitants and in general for people coming from the former imperial regions to the Weimar Republic. The talk was of, and you can also read it here, and I will now to the German terms, Reichsdeutsche or deutschstämmige Flüchtlinge, Wolgadeutsche Flüchtlinge, deutsch-russische Flüchtlinge, russlanddeutsche Flüchtlinge, russische oder jüdische Flüchtlinge. Occasionally, official and media language also referred to other groups, such as Russian or Jewish refugees, the groups that kept the League of Nations busy. They were considered political refugees and they were assumed to be an exception. The dominant sentiment was that Flüchtlinge were people of ethnic German origins, forced to leave their proper home regions as a result of the Versailles peace treaties. In the 1930s and early 1940s, the term Flüchtlinge disappeared from parliamentary debates, book publications, in news coverage, and other types of printed works. A statistical analysis of the Reichstag protocols bears this out. The reasons are close at hand. The Jewish population was categorized as Jewish and as refugees only in the perspective of the receiving countries. Ethnic and Jewish minorities in the occupied territories were either expelled from their home regions, deported to concentration camps, or killed on the spot. And the people under occupation who were violently displaced to German territories and forced to work were not categorized as refugees, but as foreign laborers. I will come back to the red statistic in some minutes. So just here now, the green one is important for this argument here. The resurgence of the refugee debate began in 1945 with the emergence of independent discourses in West German journalism, the reconstitution of the public sphere, and academic research. The number of publications using the term Flüchtling in their titles increased significantly, as did the use of the term in West German parliament that was in place since 1949. So, and this statistic here is taken out of the Deutsche Wörterbuch. This is like an online encyclopedia that assembles all kind of spoken language, and it has this means that it can statistically analyze like the emergence of terms. The West German territories, and this also holds true for the East German ones, faced large numbers of people who were involuntarily on the move. One large group was the prisoners of war who had to be repatriated. Another important group was made up of displaced persons, about 5 million people, among them Eastern European survivors of the concentration camps and those who had been forced to work in German factories. Additionally, large numbers of ethnic Germans fled the advancing Soviet army in Eastern Europe from 1944 onwards. The majority of them had been forcibly resettled to the occupied territories in East Central Europe in the course of the National Socialist colonization of the occupied of Eastern Europe. These refugees were joined by the large number of people who fled in the context of the resettlement schemes under the Potsdam Agreement in 1945. About 12 million expellees survived the post-war expulsions from Eastern Europe, 4 million in East Germany and 8 million in West Germany. Accordingly, in the late 1940s, the term Flüchtlinge was on everyone's lips. However, we can find a number of competing terms that were used to describe these groups in public debates, in governmental administrations, and in the legal sphere. These included such diverse terms as, and I now turn to the German again, Ostflüchtlinge, Kriegsvertriebene, Vertriebene, Heimatvertriebene, Ausgewiesene, Rückkehrer, Ostumsiedler, Binnen- und Außenumsiedler, Absiedler, Neubürger, Rückwanderer, Zuwanderer. Despite the broad array of terms, this list was still redolent of the 1930s and 1940s. These terms mostly described people of ethnic German descent, whilst displaced persons were underrepresented. According to Marin Röger, the term Flüchtling remained dominant until the early 1950s to describe the expellees from the former Eastern territories of the Nazi state, both as a self-description and as a term used in the administration, politics, and media alike. An initial clarification of terms was achieved in 1939 with the establishment of the Federal Ministry of Expellees, Refugees, and War Victims. This ministry established the term Vertriebene, expellees. Subsequently, two laws further contributed to anchor the term Vertriebene: the Equalization of Burns Act in 1952 and the Federal Expellees Act of 1953. The result of these acts on consolidation efforts, a semantic divergence between refugee on the one hand and expellees on the other. At the same time, from the early 1950s onwards, expellees began to describe themselves as Heimatvertriebene. As Matthias Bär has argued, the use of this term was anything but arbitrary. On the contrary, the term Heimat, home, served to maintain claims regarding property rights and social and cultural belonging to the former home territories that now form part of the new states in East Central Europe. What became of the concept of the refugee? In 1946-47, the US military agencies had used the term for people who moved between the occupation zones, assuming that they would return to their home region once living conditions improved. This line of thinking continued well into the 1950s and was extended to the DDR from 1949 on. Flüchtlinge were now perceived as people who fled the Soviet-occupied zone or the DDR because of their personal rights, civil rights, and freedoms were increasingly restricted. The term was used in a variety of ways, including Ostzonenflüchtlinge, Sowjetzonenflüchtlinge, or Zonenflüchtlinge. The degree to which the term Flüchtlinge remained reserved for inner German affairs also becomes evident when we analyze compound words that were used in parliamentary debates at the time. The trajectories show very clearly the near exclusivity with which the term Flüchtlinge was connected to people fleeing from the GDR. And I'm aware that it's not easy to read this, but this was the best version we could somehow get out of the tool. And the important thing here really is to see that Flüchtlinge really appears in a great variety of compositions, but it's always it's exclusively really reserved for the inner German refugee movements. The degree to which the understanding of forced migration as an inner German affair was at odds with international developments became clear in 1954 with the publication of the 16th edition of the Brockhaus Encyclopedia. This edition included the term refugee for the first time in its publication history, which dated back to the 1810s. The entry defines a refugee as, and I quote, a person fleeing persecution or danger to life and limb, end of quote. Although the definition seems to be generally applicable, a closer look reveals that the context mentioned refer mainly to German nationals, again. As in other fora of the time, there is talk of Ostflüchtlinge, Vertriebene, and so on. Beyond that, the term is only used to refer to a few cases in the 19th and early 20th century that refer to, I quote, the flight of entire populations or population groups from enemy armies voluntarily or on order, end of quote. The absence of any reference to the international framework and the nascent international refugee regime is telling. Instead, the term favors an approach that continued the interwar tradition of considering forced migration as a purely domestic German issue. This view did not align with two major legal frameworks. The first one was West German's Basic Law, which granted asylum to politically persecuted people who came to the Federal Republic. Although Patrice Boutrous has convincingly pointed out the shortcomings of the asylum paragraph in administrative practice, the paragraph was one of the rare transpositions of the individual right to asylum into national law as it was first established in 1948 by the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Secondly, the Brockhaus disregarded the Geneva Refugee Convention of 1951, of which West Germany was a signatory. The convention constituted the second major framework that stipulated the status of refugees in West Germany. Paragraph 1 of the Geneva Refugee Convention defined refugees as subjects of international law. Moreover, it suggested a political conception of the refugee, defining the refugee as a person who, and I quote, as a result of events occurring before 1st January 1951 and owing to well-founded fear of being persecuted for reasons of race, religion, nationality, membership of a particular social group or political opinion, is outside the country of his nationality and is unable, or owing to such fear, is unwilling to avail himself of the protection of that country, or who, not having a nationality and being outside the country of his former habitual residence as a result of such events, is unable or owing to such fear is unwilling to return to it. The Federal Republic ratified the convention shortly after its adoption. It did so under pressure from the Allied powers, who hoped to make West Germany take over responsibility for the peace in an appropriate manner. This is to say, the notion of a refugee as a person who is persecuted for political reasons and has crossed an international border was, at least in theory, firmly established in West German law. However, it took another decade until this knowledge began to be adopted in the vernacular. In 1968, the 17th edition of the Brockhaus rewrote the term refugee. For the first time, it used the term to describe migrants who were not considered German. The one-column article referred to the growing importance of the Federal Republic as a country of arrival for people seeking protection. This time, the definition did refer to the Refugee Convention and to the constitutional right to asylum. Flüchtlinge are described as, I quote, international refugees who reached West Germany as, I quote again, foreign refugees. Moreover, the term refugee is no longer used in the singular as it was in 1954. In 1968, the refugee appears as a collective, as, and I quote again, all persons who have been forced by war or political measures to leave their homes, end of quote. Yet, the former semantic levels did not disappear. German refugees and displaced persons were retained in the definition, and the term remained wedded to the former meaning of Flüchtlinge as persons of ethnic German origin. Thus, there was a conflict between different refugee conceptions that were not mutually exclusive, yet also were not easily reconciled. How can we explain, then, the shift of perspective and the complex concurrency of categories that conflate different groups of people under one term? And when and why did this Babel give way to the understanding of refugee that we still share today? At first, we might turn to the expellees' gradual integration into West German society, socially, economically, and culturally. As Maren Ulger has argued, the expellees preferred the term Heimatvertriebene for two reasons. It promised to serve as a catalyst to promote and maintain claims of return, and it indicated the transition from precariousness, which remained associated with the term Flüchtlinge, to the consolidation of living conditions. This went hand in hand with the recruitment of labor on the basis of bilateral agreements from South and Southeastern Europe since the mid-1950s. Their employment in precarious, badly paid and often dangerous jobs led to the social advancement of the ex-police, who no longer constituted the underclass. Moreover, according to Iris Nachum and Sally Schäfer, the success story of the term ex-police resulted from the strong political benefit that it offered to West Germans. It strengthened their self-perceptions as victims and thus distracted from Nazi atrocities. There is also the temptation to assign a central role to Cold War dynamics. According to Jochen Oltmer, the overwhelming majority of people seeking asylum on the basis of the Refugee Convention and the Basic Law came from Eastern Europe. Until the 1960s, they made up between 72 and 94% of the asylum seekers. Although public and political opinion was favorable to these groups and their reception was of high symbolic value, a look at the absolute numbers relativizes the role of the Cold War. In fact, we are talking about very small groups of people. Around 16,000 Hungarians in 1956-57 and around 4,000 Czechoslovaks in 1968. Accordingly, Kian Espahangizi has cautioned against overstressing the Cold War argument. According to him, labor migrants from South and Southeastern Europe, and this is here a photograph taken in Istanbul from a departing train, full with migrant laborers going to Munich, I guess. So the recruited labor force from Southeastern and South Europe, a practice still flourishing at the time, outnumbered the refugees from Eastern Europe by far. Labor migrants were also much more critical for debates on migration and integration and the legal classification of people on the move. A third line of argument revolves around the transformation of the international refugee regime since 1951. As I mentioned earlier, the Refugee Convention was initially limited to events that took place before 1951 in Europe. Ulrike Krause has unearthed the inherently colonial background of this restriction. It resulted from a provision that excluded the colonies from the application of the convention. This move had far-reaching consequences because it intervened in a heated discussion on the relationship between three different groups of rights that strongly intersected and had to be balanced. The right of the individual to be protected from persecution, the collective right of groups to national self-determination, and the primacy of state sovereignty. The colonial clause prioritized state sovereignty, as most international conventions of the time did, and set its primacy over the individual right to protection. And this is also reflected in the exclusion of internally displaced persons from the Geneva Convention, which is still valid today. The rejection of a universal definition of refugee triggered fierce headwinds, especially from the African continent, which saw an increasing number of wars of independence from European colonial rule, and with them a growing number of refugees. The most prominent examples are the first Algerian refugees who sought sanctuary in Tunisia and Morocco in 1957, or the Angolan independence struggles that led to the formation of the largest refugee groups on the continent from 1959 onwards. In 1964, the continent witnessed an estimated number of 400,000 refugees, which rose to more than 700,000 by 1967 and nearly 1 million in 1970. In 1964, the newly founded Organization of African Unity, which is today the African Union, began to draft its own refugee convention, which was adopted in 1969. It was meant to design mechanisms to deal with the growing numbers of refugees that had turned Africa into a hotspot of humanitarian aid. To do so, the African Convention sought to remedy the European bias of the 1951 Convention. Historically, the far-reaching impact of the African Refugee Convention consists precisely in the discussion it triggered within the United Nations to reform the 1951 Convention. A year after the Organization of African Unity had commenced working on its own refugee protection, the signatories of the 1951 Convention began to develop a revised version. The protocol relating to the status of refugees was adopted in 1967. It removed the temporal and spatial limitations to Europe and officially acknowledged refugee protection as a permanent problem with global dimensions. This transformation of the international refugee regime was substantial because it dispelled the myth of the transient nature of refugee movements. This myth was rooted in the interwar years, as I have shown, and it was rooted in the experience of the unprecedented nature of forced migrations. Removing this assumption meant adapting the refugee convention to a new world order that saw an enormous number of wars of independence and people forced to flee along the lines of an ethnic understanding of the national state. Against this background, I would argue that the very act of legally recognizing that refugees would be a permanent challenge for the international community was an essential factor for why the Federal Republic began to gradually conform to the international conception of the refugee. To do so, West Germany received concrete support. In the 1960s, international refugee protection gained an importance in West Germany. This was due less to the physical presence of refugees from Eastern Europe or from outside Europe, because they eventually only arrived from the late 1970s onwards. But this was more due to the participation of West Germany in the refugee management of the UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency. The UNHCR had been founded in 1950 as a successor organization both to the International Refugee Organization and the UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Organization. The UNRWA had been responsible for the care and repatriation of the DPs who were living in camps, mostly in Germany and Austria. I will not delve too deep into the history of the UNHCR. Jakob Schönheim has just written an excellent study on its early history. In 1950, when the statute of the UNHCR was drafted, the key problem was how to steward the remaining DPs without investing too much money. There was a significant decline in the willingness of states to spend large sums for refugee protection. Moreover, the largest donor, the US, had decided to pull back from financing international refugee protection in view of the increasing numbers of refugees in the Near East and in South and Southeast Asia. Accordingly, the UNHCR was equipped only with a minimum mission and budget. In 1950, its mission was to focus on World War refugees in Europe. It was expected to repatriate or resettle the remaining DPs within a limited period of time. And the UNHCR was supposed to guarantee the legal protection of the DPs by issuing minimum requirements for their treatment. This meant that the UNHCR closely cooperated with the German federal and state agencies. It was exactly this cooperation that initiated the shift in the perception of what a refugee should be in a long-term perspective. And this was for a simple reason. The UNHCR was an international refugee agency that operated on the basis of the 1951 Refugee Convention. As such, it had to operate on the basis of the international definition of the refugee, which was one that firmly excluded the decades-long interpretation of a refugee as a displaced person of ethnic German origin. A meaningful example of what this meant is the law on the legal status of DPs that was drafted in 1951. In Germany, it was the Gesetz über die Rechtsstellung heimatloser Ausländer. This law established DP as a legal category. They were now classified as homeless foreigners, as heimatloser Ausländer. Maria Alexopoulou and others have shown why this category was fraught with problems. It implicated an ambiguous legal statute that contributed to the disadvantage of the DPs. On the one hand, the law turned DPs into foreigners. They became the first foreign refugees of the new West German state. As such, they enjoyed freedom of movement and access to the labor market, rights that surpassed the international standard. On the other hand, the law bore the trademark of those who drafted it, former Nazi officials now in the Home Office. They conceded a rather large scope of discretion to local authorities regarding the application of the law. In many cases, this resulted in a loss of privileges and the continuation of racialist perceptions of the DPs as foreign and non-belonging. The UNHCR played a particular role in this scenery. A DP could become a recognized refugee under German law if that person could prove that he or she was under the purview of the UNHCR. And this is a quote here from the law. As a UN agency tasked to survey the rules of the Refugee Convention, the UNHCR conceived of the DPs as refugees, of course. Interestingly, the West German government affirmed that the new law was in line with the Refugee Convention and that it transposed the convention into West German law. However, it not only resisted labeling DPs as refugees, but even went a step further by introducing the racializing term Heimatlose Ausländer. This term accomplished two things. It emphasized the ethnic definition of citizenship, and it facilitated the rejection of moral and political responsibility for the terrible fate of DPs as victims of National Socialism. Analytically speaking, this is an interesting convergence of categories and scales. In the context of the UNHCR, refugee was a category under international law. It comprised different groups such as DPs, Palestinian refugees, and refugees from Eastern Europe. What these refugees had in common was that they had been forced to cross an international border, were living involuntarily in another country than their country of origin, and were dependent on aid and assistance. Although DPs were a clearly circumscribed group within the jurisdiction of the UNHCR, they legally and formally counted as refugees. In contrast, the Federal Republic sought to create and maintain legal, political, and semantic distinctions that graded forced migrants on the basis of ethnicity. Terms therefore played a crucial role. Expellees enjoyed the most far-reaching rights and entitlements. The term refugee remained reserved for those fleeing the GDR. These refugees were classified as ethnic Germans, although they did not automatically receive West German citizenship. Nevertheless, the willingness to grant refugee protection to them indicates an assumption that they wanted to belong to West German society. In contrast, being labeled a Heimatloser Ausländer was technical in nature. On the one hand, it granted the right to reside in the Federal Republic and to enjoy particular rights that exceeded the international standards. On the other hand, the term highlighted foreigners, non-belonging, and rejected any status as victims. The best visualization for this juxtaposition of terms, categories, and legal status is the cover of a brochure published in 1956 by the Federal Ministry for Expellees, Refugees, and War Victims. The text intended to provide information about the different groups under the mandate of the ministry and about the measures taken to integrate them. What is striking is the almost arbitrary nature of the list of labels for people who were considered not to be located properly in post-war West German society. On the one hand, the list comprised people who nowadays would be considered as internal refugees, the evacuees who fled the air raids of the larger cities and those who had lost their homes for the same reason. This is like the term Kriegsgeschädigte. And again, we see the fierce attempts to make the refugee label exclusively for people of German descent, citizens of the GDR who were considered as Flüchtlinge and Zugewanderte, while the refugees in the international understanding of the term remain compartmentalized and assigned to a different international jurisdiction. National and international conceptions of the refugee continued to drift apart well into the 1960s, and it was only in the early 1970s that the Federal Republic began to adopt the international definition of a refugee. There were several decisive factors here. First, I'd like to mention the accession of West Germany to the United Nations in 1973 that played a role because the social liberal government was now tasked to coordinate its initiatives with the UN partners more than before. This led to a more or less immediate concern with refugee protection policies, as this formed part of the UN institutions. Most obviously, this concerned development aid policies, which were now increasingly connected with humanitarian aid for refugees. In 1973, for instance, West Germany began providing food assistance for Palestinian refugees. The government decided in the same year to expand its development policies and to consider refugees' assistance as part of its international engagement. Accordingly, the planning and strategic development of assistance was increasingly moved from the Home Office to the Federal Ministry for Economic Cooperation. A second reason for the increasing divergence between conceptions of the refugee was the transformation of the mandate of the UNHCR. Malika Rahal and Benjamin Thomas White have highlighted the importance of the Algerian War for the extension of the UNHCR mandate for an indefinite period of time. they sketch the tightrope act of UN member states in assigning responsibility for the hundreds of thousands of Algerian refugees in Morocco and Tunisia, on the one hand, and the statutory limits of UNHCR on the other, since these forbade an intervention outside Europe and for internal refugees. And because Algeria only became independent in 1962, the population officially had French citizenship and was thus not eligible for international help. However, UNHCR provided relief from 1960 onwards and thus substantially extended its European mandate. When the 1967 Protocol of the Refugee Convention was adopted, UNHCR received an unlimited mission for the entire world. In view of the massive refugee crisis that occurred from the mid-1960s onwards, this affected how UNHCR understood its European responsibilities. The organization remained on the spot and continued to care for the peace until the end of the Cold War. But it began to introduce chronologies that indicated a shift of priorities. UNHCR now differentiated between generations of refugees by describing the pre-1951 refugees as old refugees, while speaking of current refugees as the new refugees. This, of course, impacted West German perceptions of refugees. And here again, we see that the conception of the Flüchtling as an international figure was constructed in the context of a fundamentally transformed international constellation. As I near the end of my remarks here today, I would like to tie in with the literature, and I have to somehow, of human rights that consider the 1970s as a breakthrough to a global morality. A crucial part of this breakthrough rested in notions of global solidarity with both anti-colonial and pro-refugee movements. The most telling case were the Chilean refugees of 1973. Van Bösch recently showed how these refugees transformed into a public figure that set the standards for the conception of refugees as an inherently international group of people. Moreover, it triggered the formation of the German branches of human rights movements, such as Amnesty International, that actively propagated the conception of refugees as a politically persecuted person from abroad. To conclude, I'd like to consider two things. Hopefully, I've helped us trace the long and winding road from conceptions of the refugee as a person of ethnic German origin to an internationalized figure. In West Germany, this transformation took place in the 1960s, while the breakthrough of the refugee as an international legal subject had already begun in the 1920s. This was a highly contested process characterized by ambivalence and shifting sympathies. In this process, the ethnic connotation of the term Flüchtlinge vanished over time, and West German politics and society finally acknowledged a formal political definition of refugees. One major catalyst was a substantially changing international situation, which saw a great many wars of decolonization and the subsequent revision of the mandate of the UN Refugee Organization. The international conception of Flüchtlinge was thus an immediate expression of a fundamentally reversed position of West Germany in international politics. But this story, I think, makes us also aware of the liminal character of terms and categories that are applied to people on the move. Christoph Kalter has provided a wonderful discussion about the question as to why the retornados, the Portuguese return migrants from the former imperial territories, can be analytically regarded as refugees, even though they were not acknowledged as such by the UNHCR and the Portuguese government. If we apply this to West Germany, it invites us to a careful historical contextualization of the terms. Even if the term refugee was established in international law since the 1920s, it took decades to align it with the various mindsets of the historical actors. In this process, the UNHCR played a fundamental role as it contributed to anchor an ethnically grounded conception of the state that saw refugees as a politically defined group compared to the ethnic definition of citizenship. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the German Historical Institute London podcast. Follow us on social media and check our website to keep up to date with new episodes.